morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
My name is Joseph Karaganis, and I'm here representing the petitioners, St. John's United Church of Christ, and the individual religious petitioners, as well as the villages of Elk Grove Village and Bensonville. If you don't mind, Your Honor, I may pause every momentarily to drink water. Your Honors, may it please the court, I would like to summarize the following major points before beginning the substance of my argument. One, there is state action here that meets the test of coercion and significant encouragement for FAA's involvement in the Phase 1 airport project. Two, under the compelling interest test as articulated in Yoder and Ocentro, they require a very clear analytical framework of the incremental loss or benefit between the destructive alternatives and the non-destructive alternatives. No such incremental analysis is present here. Three, there are clear violations of the AIP statute. And four, there's redressability sufficient to satisfy any Article III standing requirements. Let me, if I first can turn to a central question that comes from this court's decision in Bensonville, too. Is there state action? There's state action here for two reasons, Judge.
Well,
Judge.
At least for me, I think, let's talk about jurisdiction and standing.
Yes.
All right. You argue that you have standing.
That's correct.
And I wish you'd spell that out.
Well, the standing for the religious petitioners here, Your Honor, is very clear. Our cemetery is going to be destroyed. It is a central element of our religious belief structure.
Well, what I want to focus on is the fact that we have a decision, well, not a decision, an offer and an acceptance for $29 million.
A contract, yes, Your Honor.
To reimburse the city.
Correct.
For activities that have taken place far from the villages and far from the cemetery.
That is also correct, Your Honor, for what the reimbursement is. What is not included in that analysis is the fact that the document, the offer and acceptance, the contract, imposes a specific obligation to construct all of the Phase 1 airport project, not just the section you're referring to as reimbursement. So there is a contractual obligation, which I might add is set forth at least three locations.
Well, if the city...
I'm sorry?
If the city decides to use the money, it has to use it for the purposes for
if the city decides to use the money, it's already used it for that portion. If the city decides to use the money, it's under a contractual obligation to build the Phase 1 project and destroy St. Johannes. It's cited, Your Honor, both in the transmittal letter of the grant transmittal at JA060666, which is the sponsor is obligated to accomplish the development described therein. And when you go to the grant descriptions.
How is your argument consistent with the Supreme Court's take that if there were 100% federal funding?
You're talking about Rendell Baker and...
Yeah, I'm trying to understand your standing.
If I may. Mm-hmm. In both those cases, Your Honor, Blum versus Uretzky and Rendell versus Baker, the financial assistance was not for the wrong. In other words, the government was not funding the specific wrong being charged. In this case, there is a contract by the government, the federal government, demanding that the specific wrong take place, namely the construction of the Phase 1 airfield project. This is a contract that calls for a specific project. They're going to get payments over 15 years. They set forth what the payments are. But the central part of the contract says you will build it. And that obligation, by the way, Your Honor, in the transmittal letter on the original LOI says FAA will pursue all remedies available in law or equity. Which again brings this case very much into a compulsion. There's a compulsory aspect.
But let me break it down a little bit, just so I understand. But you're not claiming that the $29 million in the AIP grant that any of that will go to disrupt the cemetery or cause any physical harm to the villages.
No,
right?
there's a contract now that says you've got to destroy it, but the $29 million doesn't go there. It's one of a stream of 15 payments. By the time the 15th payment runs around, our cemetery is going to be done.
But each of the payments is subject to a decision process, right? I mean, they will perform work and then seek reimbursement.
That's a reimbursement mechanism. But, Your Honor, the work they're doing, namely the prospective destruction of St. Johannes Cemetery, is not only going to be funded by this $337 million issue, it's also going to be funded, and I guess I'm not supposed to talk about the elephant in the corner, which is a $1.282 billion PFC authorization. Mm-hmm. The federal money coming here, and this is why I want to distinguish Blum and Rendell Baker, those were programmatic fundings that had nothing to do with the specific activity that was the allegation of the wrong. This is $337 million or $1.2 billion or $1.6 billion. That's money coming from the federal government to complete the very project that will cause the harm. And we think, Your Honor, under for example, the woman's equity case law of this court, Woman's Equity 1 ultimately said that you couldn't sue the federal government for a wrong because you had a viable local plaintiff to sue. What they also said was causation. When the federal government causes by giving money to a project, there is sufficient causation to establish standing. So I would just say to Your Honor that there's clearly more than adequate compulsion here and more than adequate encouragement when you look at the financial resources.
But if this case were just about the $29 million, you don't have standing.
If this case is the $29 million, just like airplanes flying into airports, Judge, we're right in the approach radar of this court because we've got another case pending.
I understand that.
With regard to the $1.282 billion.
If we disagreed with your reading of the grant and didn't see that language as requiring the city to finish the entire project, and we're just focusing on the $29 million, that would be a problem for you.
Again, they've been able to slice and dice it so it doesn't come, that right. $29 million doesn't come directly. But the contractual obligation and all the merits to justify the contract, in other words, all the merits to justify the $29 million are based on the fundamental assumption that they will complete the phase one airport project, which does destroy St. Johannes. If I can, Judge, and this is...
Let me just go on here. If we were to set aside the $29 million grant, how is the harm redressed?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
How is the harm redressed?
Well, the harm is redressed in a couple of ways. One, Your Honor, we cited to the court's decision in Aikens, which, by the way, was picked up by the Supreme Court in Massachusetts versus EPA, which says that when you have a procedural wrong where the federal statutes give you a right of recovery or a right to redress, that procedural wrong is enough to constitute standing. In addition, Your Honor, a decision by you that the federal government had to follow RFRA here would apply equally to the case 1762, it's the PFC case. So it would apply to that equally as well. But if I can, let's talk about RFRA because what it requires.
Well, I think the trouble we're having is how do we get to that? You have to be clear that you have standing first.
We have standing, Your Honor, because we're harmed. We're harmed by the contract. The contract calls for the destruction of St. Johannes Cemetery. It doesn't say you will only construct that portion of the runway up on 927. It says you will construct 1028C. Which is the runway that goes right through St. Johannes.
See, what I'm trying to understand is your argument is basically on the merits. You want us to focus just on this smaller part of phase one.
We want to focus.
In terms of your standing and your jurisdiction of the court, you want us to focus on the entire project.
No, we want the court, respectfully, to focus on the phase one airfield project, which is what the contract and the grant call for. Is the building of the phase one airfield project. Now, in the briefs, when we get to the merits on the issue of RFRA compliance, you will find that both Ocentro and Yoder require an incremental analysis.
No, but what I'm trying to understand is, I mean, we're not supposed to decide the merits, but we can peek at the merits in determining whether we have
standing. Yes, we can, Your Honor.
And you're basically parsing up Judge,
we're not. We tried to bring the whole phase one project before this court previously, and we were told by the FAA there was no jurisdiction. The FAA's taken it in pieces. In terms of the whole project.
So describe precisely what was not before this court before.
Yeah, Your Honor, there was no funding question before this court. This court ruled.
I understand, but what I'm trying to understand is what specific findings had the FAA not made at the time it issued the ROD?
Okay, the ROD contains no finding on any of the requirements of 47106 with regard to the grant project. The grant project wasn't before this court, and there's no finding in the ROD.
No, I'm trying to make myself clear. In rejecting your earlier challenge, the court upheld, in effect, findings by the FAA that the city was eligible to apply for AAIA grants.
In the court, yes, Your Honor, it upheld the EIS. The court also ruled that our attack or challenge to the grant was premature because there hadn't been a final order.
What new finding did the FAA have to make in order to issue?
By way of example, Your Honor, it had to make the requisite AIP findings for all of the Phase One project. There are no such findings in the ROD.
Where is the authority that says that if the FAA has made determinations as to the total project, when it comes to the point of funding parts of the project, it has to redo all of this all over again?
Because the very structure of the statute, Your Honor, says that plans are not subject to 47-106. Projects are subject, airport development projects. The airport layout plan you had before you.
Is your argument based on what is the meaning of the word project?
Well, that's part of it, but let's take the other argument, Your Honor, which the court indicated before there was not sufficient nexus to. If we take the entire ALP plan, all of the alternatives that the federal government proposed, the so-called modeled alternatives, were all for destruction. They failed to identify or they failed to model any of the alternatives that dealt with the non-destructive alternatives. So you therefore are not in a position, this court's not in a position to say, if we took a non-destructive alternative, would the difference between that and the FAA's plan be 1%, 10%, or 50%? There's nothing in the record that supports finding out that. They were supposed to model non-destructive alternatives because they put forward destructive alternatives premised on this computer modeling. It's just not present in the record. And again, we're not trying to dance on a statute here. An ALP plan is just that. None of the requirements of 47-106 apply to the plan. They do apply to discrete projects, such as the Phase 1 project. There's no finding in it. There's no evidence in the entire record on the ALP as to the performance of the Phase 1 airfield project. So we're in a situation, Your Honor, where many statutory requirements under the AIP statute have not been satisfied for the Phase 1 project. But whether this court looks at this development as either a plan, the $16 billion, $15 billion ALP plan, or it looks at it as an airport development project, which is what the statute calls for. There is no comparison between the destructive portions of either the ALP or the Phase One airfield plan, namely the destruction of St. Johannes, and alternatives that don't destroy it. So this court is not, and I think the most important case that's before this court, the most important authority, is the Ocentro case. Government comes in and says, we have this compelling governmental interest. And on general principles, we agree. Aviation's an important governmental interest. But you can't simply say it and then self-define what your governmental interest is by only the project that you propose. You've got to come in with a comparative analysis. And Ocentro specifically says, show us what the harm to the federal government project is if you employed the non-destructive alternative. That's what Ocentro calls for, that's what Yoder calls for, and that's what we don't have here. Is this clock? I'd like to reserve the remaining time. Thank you, Judge.
All right, thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Your Honors, good morning, and may it please the Court. Alice Thurston on behalf of the FAA. With me at council table is Ms. Benna Solomon, who is representing the city. I'll be arguing for 10 minutes. Ms. Solomon will be speaking for 5. We're here today on a grant that represents 1% of the total funding of the O'Hare Modernization Program and less than 9% of the amount that was at issue in the prior Bensonville decision before the case. The grant reimburses the city for work that was already done and which was permitted to be done by the ROD that was at issue in the prior case. The city was not required to seek this grant and may have built this grant without using, done the site preparation work that it was funded without using federal monies, as the court found in the prior case.
How do you address your opponent's argument that the contract itself obligated the city to eventually destroy the cemetery?
I do not believe that the contract goes anywhere near as far as my opponent says in requiring completion of Phase 1. If you look at the contract, it's for the development described therein. I'm looking at Joint Appendix 6066. If you turn to page 6068, it says this letter of intent, which is for the $337 million that was for the whole 15 grants, covers those years. The enclosed application requests $29 million of those funds to reimburse amounts already spent for runway construction or future runway 9L and 27R as part of phase one. So it's for the runway that's the most northerly runway. It's 2 miles away from the cemetery on the airport layout plan and on the airport itself, and it is not obligating the city to do anything. The city was already permitted to do this construction work by the ROD.
But I think the language they might be referring to is at same page 606, the grant offer and executed acceptance thereof will together constitute the agreement under which the sponsor is obligated to accomplish the development described therein.
I believe that the development described therein is the site preparation for runway 9L. I mean, in point of fact, it had already occurred, and all of these grants will only be for reimbursement for work that is already accomplished as permitted by the ROD. In other cases, grants may issue in an advanced manner, and they still would be for reimbursement because you can only draw down after the work has been accomplished. But this language might cover another case. It's not the instance here. It's not. The prospective language cannot enforce something which already has been done, and in any event,
but I just sorry. Clear, excuse me, is the FAA not taking the position then that the petitioners would never have standing to challenge one of these grants? Just hypothetically, suppose grant number 5 encompasses the area where the cemetery is located.
No, we do take the position that none of these grants is reviewable because of the specific limitation in the statute as to who may review a grant. It's only disappointed grant applicants who may review a grant. Mm-hmm. It is a congressional provision that is very narrow and constitutes an exception to the broader arching provision which would otherwise let a grant application be reviewed.
Is the grant always sought after the work is done, or can it be?
No, it can be.
In this case,
where you have a letter of intent and then you have a grant applications, but in this case they will always be sought after because the permission was given in the ROD to do the work. And as the court found, even if this 1% of the funding were not available from the federal money, they have many alternative sources of funding. They can go for GARBs that are not backed by airlines. There's no support for the contention that airlines have to back their GARBs. And the city can request private funding for construction of aspects of the.
But once they begin this process of taking the federal grant money,
mm-hmm.
do they have the ability to just say, you know, we'll use, say, $300 million of this and then decide that we're not going to complete the project after all?
There's provisions and there's a, where's that remedy? The language in this grant money is designed to ensure that federal funds are not spent years after they were allocated, that they're drawn down rapidly, and that they, you know, within the appropriated year, and that they're spent on the project for which they were actually allocated. If the project, if let's say there was some malfeasance in on behalf of the city or something that would require the FAA to get back its money, there are remedy provisions.
In other words, if the city decided to build a playground.
Yeah, the FAA could get the money back. In contract terms, where there's a reimbursement provision in the remedies provision that is the result of not following through with this contract. The FAA is not in fact requiring it and could never expect specific performance at this in terms of enforcement of a contract because damages are available.
Okay, they so your position would be that no matter how far along in this grant process they get. The city is never obligated to actually complete this project because that's their argument, that once you start, there's now coercion because, in fact, you have to finish what you started.
No, I mean, if an earthquake were to hit O'Hare tomorrow, the city would not be obligated to complete this project, for example. If the money were taken by the city of Chicago and not spent on the specific aspect, the site preparation in this case, for which it was allocated, the FAA would exercise its remedies, and there's a full panoply, and it's in the administrative record. Thank you.
Looking at
in general, pages 01283, which talks about suspension and termination of the grant, and on 01284, it talks about funds recovery if there's been a problem with the grant. So the money would come back to the FAA. The project would not be compelled to be built. That, I think, is an entire red herring. It's a question of making sure that the money is not misspent, as opposed to making sure that the money is inappropriate, is that the project goes forward.
I'd like you to address the relationship between the AIP grant and the PFC application. How does the policy work? If we were to agree with petitioners that there was that the AIP grant was mistakenly made because it somehow didn't meet statutory criteria, what effect does that have on the PFC application?
It has no effect. The PFC application has gone forward. They've seized on this term eligibility.
Well, I'm referring specifically to it's FAA order 5500.1, which I think has language that suggests the two are related.
Is that the language that talks about eligibility?
Yes.
If you look at 49 U.S.C. 40117, it describes an eligible airport-related project for purposes of a PFC application, and it describes categories A through F. And AIP eligible projects are only one of those categories. So in other words, AIP projects are a subset of projects for which PFCs are available. You can get PFCs for a much broader range of projects, including, for example, under 40117A3E, for example, for constructing gates in related areas. These AIP funds are not available for that. And under B, for terminal development, these AIP funds are committed to capacity-enhancing projects such as runways and taxiways, and they're not eligible. My point is that PFC funding is available for a much broader range of actions than AIP funds, in this case, are available for, and therefore PFCs have to be judged on a separate statutory basis. They are in fully separate statutory review provisions and statutory underpinnings.
Let me read to you the language from the FAA order. And again, it's FAA order 5500.1, paragraphs 4 through 6, subparagraph B now, talking about PFC / AIP eligibility. And the phrase is in here, and it's in it. If it is not AIP eligible, it is not PFC eligible.
That would be for something for which AIP funds and PFC funds are both being sought. There are, again, it's 40117A3B and E, for example, are items that are completely not AIP eligible and yet are PFC eligible. So that I do want to stress that it's a separate statute, separate statutory review provisions, and it currently is before this court.
So this would have, if we were to find that, this would have no effect on the PFC application. Is that right?
No, actually, I don't think it would, because in fact, if you were to withdraw this money, the court has already found that the city has other sources of funding available to it in the prior case. And the PFC money is a separate decision of non-federal funds. I'd like to stress the fact that it's private money that's being talked about there. It's a federal approval, but it is a tax on individual.
But the FAA would not withhold approval on the PFC if there were a finding that they had made a mistake about the AIP grant.
No, I don't believe so. I think that would go forward, and I think it's unrelated. Wrong on that, I'll get back to you, but I don't think I am.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I will. I'd like to call the court to one other aspect, and this is something that's in the Seventh Circuit decision, which goes directly to the heart of, I think, what is petitioner's argument, that because this is a sub-project of the larger project that was approved, we must redo the whole analysis and there must be a RFRA analysis. If you look on page 23 of the Seventh Circuit's opinion, this is the same issue that was raised in the Seventh Circuit, and I believe it was also raised in the prior Benson New case. And I'll read it to you. Plaintiffs contend that because while environmental findings have been made with respect to the ALP, those findings did not focus on the Phase 1 project, and I'm alighting it just a little bit. The agency's decision was improper. Court held, based on our reading of the record, however, the Phase 1 project is a part of the ALP for which the city has received FAA approval. If petitioners wanted to challenge the environmental findings made by the FAA, they certainly could have included these claims in the petition for the review of the ROD that they filed in the D.C. Circuit. We made the same point on page 69 of our brief. You have in the ROD a number of very explicit findings as to what may be reviewed in that ROD. And many of the 47106 decisions are made expressly in the ROD, and the petitioners were invited to review them. I point the court to Joint Appendix 4895 through 4897 and 4904, including at 4896, the effect on natural resources and the consideration of alternatives that should have been challenged in the case for the ROD. And I will sit down now, if I may.
So just for clarification, what new findings had to be made in order to make the offer?
There were specific findings as to whether or not there was good title, and as to let's see, I can rattle them off here in 47106.
All right, if you're just going to rattle off the statutory provisions.
Well, the consistent, the project will have funding to pay for project costs not paid for the United States government. If you look at the pages I cited, you will see the ones that were made in the ROD, and by default, the rest were.
All right, so I just want to be a little clearer here, piggybacking on Judge Brown's question. As we go down the road and more grant money, that's in my hypothetical, is awarded to the city and the city accepts it and takes it as reimbursement. And finally, we're at grant number 5, which involves the actual physical area involving the involving the cemetery. By the time the FAA offers grant number 5, the cemetery will already have been destroyed if it's just for reimbursement money. Destroyed pursuant to the ROD authorization, as I understand it.
That's correct.
So even in those circumstances, the petitioners, at least as they frame their argument today, would not have standing again because they could not show redressability?
I believe that's right.
In other words, I understand your jurisdictional argument as to whether, you know, under the statute 46.1110A, but I just want to be clear as to how far that same argument applies in your standing analysis. In other words, is it not close to saying that once the ROD is approved, where the city has made a representation that it can fund the project without federal money, then there could never be a showing of redressability?
It's not merely a question of the city having made that representation. The court looked at the FAA's finding as to the financial feasibility and the independent consultant studies as to the financial feasibility, and in the prior Bensonville case, affirmed that finding so that the court itself found that there were alternative sources of money, which gets, I think, to the crux of the redressability issue. That was 9% of the total funding. This is less than 1% of the total funding.
In my hypothetical, we're further down.
Let's take all 9% then. Let's say the cemetery is reimbursed as the last grant.
Right.
That decision has been made, I believe, by a panel of this court in the prior case. And it's irrespective of where the work is done. It's
right.
The amount is.
The answer to my question is yes.
The answer to the question, I believe, is yes, that the ROD offers the redressability is addressed in the prior case, and the ROD offers the approval. I do hope that I am not penalizing counsel for Chicago.
No, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. We support the FAA's submissions that there is no cause of action here to review a grant to a third party. There is no jurisdiction. There is no standing. Indeed, none of the elements of standing, injury, causation, redressability, is present here. unless there are questions on those issues, I will turn to the state action.
Can I just press you so I'm clear as to your position in response to my last question? Essentially, because both of the financial feasibility and the court's acceptance of that, as it were, in its prior opinion, there could never be redressability of
that is correct.
Of these grants.
There is not injury, there is not causation, and there is not redressability. The only thing the city is building with the federal money is exactly what we said we were going to build in the ROD. And the FAA's approval of that ROD, as the court held in the prior case, was the city's plan and only the city's plan. It could not be attributed to the FAA. And for that reason, there is not the causation necessary to pin that on the FAA.
So bear with me just a moment. Suppose we're further down the road at my hypothetical grant 5, and we're at the location where the cemetery used to be, and just take it in my hypothetical that there is injury in fact. Would there still not be any redressability where, in my hypothetical, the FAA failed to make a finding that the statute required before making the offer to the city?
It is not redressable because the injury is not being caused by the FAA. It is being caused by the city. The only thing we will do in Grant 5, hypothetically, is what we said we would do. No more findings have been made. No more actions have been approved. Nothing more is attributable to the federal government than was attributable and was not enough.
You're saying there could be other fora and other defendants, but not FAA here. Is that it?
The importance of pinning it on the FAA, right, of course, is to trigger RFRA.
Right.
They've already sued the city as well and lost, so that they're not trying to sue the city in this case. We have always accepted that we will be doing this work. Mm-hmm. We came to the decision reluctantly. No one could figure out another way of doing it. The FAA approved it. This court upheld it. We're building it. When we build it, even with federal money, it will still be our action. It is also not redressable because the federal money, particularly the money at issue in this case, is a fractional share, literally a fractional share, of what was already held not to be sufficient to be redressable. We do, for that reason, take the position in our brief that the funding issues that are raised here are actually res judicata. As we understand the prior decision, the court framed the issue in the prior case as whether the approval of an airport layout plan incident to a determination of eligibility for federal funding. And the holding was, when the federal government merely acquiesces in a plan and determines that it is eligible for federal funding, that is not state actions. Funding is all over the prior decision. We do, for that reason, submit that the funding issues are foreclosed here. The only response...
Would it make any difference if the federal government was actually paying 100%?
It would not, Your Honor. The Rendell Baker case and the cases that this court cited the prior time, again, even if it's not res judicata, there's nowhere to go with that. Rendell Baker and Blum against Duretsky hold that receipt of virtually all funding is not enough. The only thing petitioners have ever pointed to overcome that holding, and Mr. Karaganis referred to it here this morning, is that now we're funding the specific thing that is alleged to injure them. But this grant certainly doesn't. And none of the grants does.
Well, the counsel, I think, argues here that the difference between this case and those other cases is that that was a kind of programmatic funding that had nothing to do with the wrong that was being challenged. Whereas here, this money is actually funding the injury.
Right. And that was the point I was trying to make. This is nothing more specific than the funding in that case. The school, for example, received federal funding to run a school. It did not receive federal funding specifically to hire employees, but of course you can't run a school without employees, and you can't run a good school without terminating employees who are not up to your standards. So in that sense,
go ahead.
In that sense, the funding was certainly for the same program as was alleged to cause the injury.
This funding, this grant was used on the north. It is a mile or more away from anything having to do with the cemetery. And considered in the context of the entire project, it is 10% of the funding of the entire project. It is not more specific. It's the federal government is not funding the act and only the act of relocating the cemetery, although I will add it would not matter if the federal government were. Funding alone does not translate into state action. The only case petitioners have ever relied on for that is the Gautreaux case, and we explain in our brief why that case is different. It was race. It was a specific statute. It was also before Rendell Baker and Blum against Uretzky. It is probably not good law anymore. But if it is, it is limited to the specific context where where HUD was held liable in its own right for knowingly funding illegal activity. The holding of the Seventh Circuit is the city has not engaged in illegal activity. Whatever the FAA is funding, it is not funding illegal activity. And we would ask the petition for review be dismissed. Thank you.
Counsel for petitioners?
If I may, Your Honors, you'd ask the question, what happens 5 years down the road? Will we have an opportunity to get into court then? The answer is we probably face a challenge on the basis of mootness because our cemetery will be gone. By the time, if this is the game that's going to be played, we're never going
to
have it.
It's unfair to call it a game. I mean, there's a
process. I'm sorry?
It's unfair to call it a game. I mean, Congress has set up a process.
Without a doubt, Your Honor.
And the question is, having received court affirmance that it complied with the statutes as to the ROD, then what is the effect of subsequent funding?
Well, Your Honor, if I may, we tried to bring the funding issue to this court in the prior case, and we were told there was no jurisdiction because there was not a final order. And we brought the case. It was the FAA who said the court can't hear that because it's not a final order.
But
so
the court,
we were,
in saying that, didn't say, but come back to us later.
Except that
the merits all over again.
When the order came, that created the basis for seeking a review in this court. If I may, Your Honor, the redressability question here can be addressed very simply by the Aikens case in Massachusetts versus EPA. We have a right. Our right is created by the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It's a procedural right. If that law has been violated, simply a declaration by this court that the law has been violated and a remand is sufficient to constitute redressability. It's Aikens versus FEC in Massachusetts versus EPA, citing the Lujan case, footnote 7 in the Lujan decision, which basically allows a person who's been injured where there's a statutory procedural right to assert redressability simply on that basis alone. So we have redressability here. I might also add that there is a declaration as required by the rules of this court by Dr. Campbell, which basically goes through the fact that this project needs $2 billion, the Phase 1 airfield project, needs $2 billion in combined federally authorized AIP and PFC funds. Now, I apologize for using the word game here. We're frustrated, Your Honor, because we know that this project takes $2 billion. We know that when year five comes along and somebody says, oh, we're getting a reimbursement for the destruction of the cemetery won't be there anymore. And let me ask you on the contract question, or raise this with the court. If the construction that they want has already taken place and it's been done and they're being paid, what's the purpose of the language that you are compelled to complete this project? It's compelled to complete the entire project. The federal government doesn't give its money and put these contract terms in if, indeed, the work that they're paying for has already been done.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.